And we have our next guest on the line, another Cork lady, Mary Allen. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Tina. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How's Brisbane this morning?
It's lovely and sunny, which is good because we haven't had the best of weather lately. But yeah, I've been feeding kookaburras and king parrots on my balcony this morning.
Oh, so, man. Yeah. And we're all getting very soggy down here in Sydney. It's a real Irish thing, isn't it, to start a conversation with the weather?
Yeah, it is.
Thanks very much for having a chat with us. And we, as I said to Maria from Melbourne this morning, we're really starting to get interested in what's going on in various parts of the country to let our listeners know the things going on. Now, you have such an incredible story. Where do we start? So you are from Cork City.
Yep.
And you came to Australia the first time, 1999.
1999 as a backpacker, yeah. Came out on the year's visa. So I visited quite a lot. I saw quite a lot of Australia at the time, but of course it was only the year visa, you know.
Indeed.
So I had no luck getting a sponsorship, and off I travelled home at the end of the year and settled back into life back in Ireland, you know. I got a job after. I've always travelled a lot anyway. I've lived in a lot of different places, and I'd done business studies in college years earlier and absolutely hated it. Big mistake. Did it because I thought I'd get a job. Didn't get a job either. I ended up working in hotels. Went back to college and did art. Absolutely loved art. And through that, I started working as a graphic designer. I actually got my first experience as a graphic designer in Australia in 1999. So Australia has been very good to me. And after that, I went back to Ireland and got a job in a newspaper as a graphic designer. Did that for about 2 years. And I heard, and you know, it was a small newspaper, so you had to kind of help with everything else.
Mm.
So I ended up helping with a bit of writing, helping with writing headlines and drawing out the news pages and stuff rather than doing just designing ads. And through that, then I'd heard there was a job going in the Examiner office in Cork. So I drove them nuts with phone calls trying to get an interview. And eventually got the interview. There's actually a funny story with that as well. Years earlier when I was in school and they said to me, what did I want to do? I said, I'd like to be a journalist. And they said, do you have any relatives in the Examiner office? I said, no. And they said, well, you're not going to get in there then. You need a blood test for that place. Which is a bit unfair, but that was the reputation at the time. So years later, I got the interviews at the Examiner office, and they did say to me, do you know anybody here? Are you related to anybody here? And I said, no, I don't think so. So I had to go through this process of three different interviews, and one of them was in front of a big panel of people. It was very scary, you know.
I can imagine.
And so I managed to get myself the job anyway as a sub-editor, drawing the live newspaper, which meant, like, masses of pressure, very, very full on. I mean, my first week I was really over my head and going, what have I got myself into? I can't do this. And, you know, after a while you just kind of get used to the pace. But when I started in there, my dad met me for lunch and he said to me, have you met Jerry Allen yet? And I'm like, who's Jerry Allen? Oh, he's your cousin, he works in there. And then I said to one of the bosses in there, Jerry came up to say hi to me, and when the bosses passed, and he said, you know Jerry? I said, he's my cousin. He said, you should have told me that. You wouldn't have had three interviews.
A sign of the times, huh?
Oh, different days, yeah. There were different days. So I worked in the Examiner office for, oh God, about 10 years. So, you know, I was done. I bought a house in Ireland, in Whitegate, which is down by the sea. It's very beautiful.
It is indeed. I know it well.
And so I was very settled, and I had two children. And then the GFC came along, and my husband lost his job. Just at the worst time, he lost his job. Couldn't find another job. The value of our house plummeted because of the crash in the housing market. And my wages just wouldn't cover everything we had to pay. So I ended up, there was voluntary redundancies in the Examiner office at the time as well. Like, they'd give you a package if you took a year or two off. So I signed up to take the package. we used the money. We were looking around for work and there was no work anywhere. You know, everywhere was affected by the GFC. And we were willing to go anywhere, but and then a job came up in China for my husband. And he totally did not want to go to China. And it was very scary, the thought of it. But we did it. We signed up for a year's contract and moved out to China in 2009 with two babies who were born 2007 and 2008. So they were literally babies. So that was very scary and very fun, but very scary.
Very brave.
So, yeah, we rocked up in Suzhou, which is about an hour from Shanghai. It's got about 6 million people, which is considered small in China. God, I mean, the first day I was there, I went to the supermarket to try and... Now, supermarket is not like what we have. It was these little corner shops, like, attached to a wet market. And I'm going there looking for stuff I can feed my kids with. And a lot of the cans and that, there's no pictures on them. And the writing is just there in Chinese. And you're looking at them going, I have no idea what's in these. So it was like, buy one of everything.
give it a go.
An experiment, yeah. But, yeah, we soon found an expat community around to help us out. We soon found out where the expat supermarkets and stuff were, so it was fine. And during that year then, when I was living in China in 2009-2010, I came back here for a holiday. And I just kind of remembered, you know, from China, you're coming from back then a very dirty, very polluted place, like grey skies all the time from smog. And then you come back here and this place is like paradise. And
yes.
I was just saying to my husband, I forgot how nice it was. We really should apply for a visa. So yeah, we spent the next year or so working on getting a visa and we moved to Sydney in 2011. And we've been here most of the time since. I worked for the Irish Echo when I was down in Sydney.
Yes, indeed. And sadly, no more.
Yeah.
Sadly, no more, yeah. And it's a real shame. It's a real shame. But, you know, you guys are doing a fantastic news service there. I mean, there's no problem people getting their Irish news with you guys on the scene.
Oh, thank you. We do our best. Your background as a journalist and working in newspapers, and then you had your own magazine, didn't you?
Yeah, so when I came up to Queensland, I was working as a publications manager for... Another thing now where I've put myself out of my depth and gone into a job where I thought, oh, there's no way I can do this. So as a publications manager, I have to do everything from sales and marketing to design and laying out the whole suite of magazines. And found out through, you know, just got the year's practice of doing it and realised I could do it. I actually could run my own magazine from start to finish if I wanted to, you know. And I set up a magazine called Irish Queenslander. Which actually, it was a print magazine, and at its peak, I was printing 10,000 copies, and it was going everywhere from far north Queensland down to northern New South Wales. It was free, and it was given out through pubs and clubs and stuff like that. But circumstances weren't great for us here that year, and as well as doing the magazine, and print magazines are a lot more work than online magazines, because you... There's a lot more back and forth with printers and stuff that you have to get exactly right, like the pictures have to be a certain quality and whatever, and it really complicates things. So it was a lot of work. And then as well as doing the magazine, it was a community magazine, and I had to be very involved in the community to do it. So I was doing volunteering right across the community, and I was on various committees, like the St. Patrick's Day Committee. I was off. You know, you get asked to do things. Once your head pops up in the community, you can't get asked to do things.
So, yes, that's very true.
Yeah, it's with everybody. You know, they need as much help as they can get, you know, and there's not that many people to do it. So I was on the St. Patrick's Day Committee, and I was on the Lansdowne Club Committee, and I was doing lots of volunteering for the Irish Australian Sports Association. And, you know, I really was burning the candle at both ends, because I also had two very young children. And within a year of this, I was completely exhausted. And my family back home, we had a lot of concern because my mum had just been diagnosed with cancer. So I went home in November. I shut up shop and went home in November, and my mother died in January, so we didn't get much time. And I stayed there because, of course, my dad's on his own, so I stayed for until dad actually had cancer at the same time as my mum. and my dad died a year later. So we're back in Ireland now, and we're fairly settled and twiddling the thumbs a bit, you know. And within a couple of years of it, you know, when your family, it's different when you've got your parents. When they go, your ties to the country are not as strong, and it's all changed. And, you know, you're sitting on your own at home in the rubbish weather, and you're, you know, kind of wondering, did I make the right choice here to come back here? And we decided not. We came back out to Queensland in 2018. And so we're very settled now. I don't think we're going anywhere now. We're actually very happy we made a good choice. Oh, yeah. So my other magazine.
Oh, your other magazine.
And magazine. So
say, when you were in Ireland, like with your parents and everything, were you actually busy or were you taking it easy? Because you sound like you're just a dynamo.
I kept on a column with the Evening Echo, so that's Cork's daily newspaper. I had a column I'd started with them years earlier called Surf's Up, and it was from the early days of the internet, and I was reviewing like internet columns. I kept that up for years. And I was always dipping in, doing a little bit of part-time work here and there. Mm. But, you know, the kids keep you very busy when you're young. Like, I was running around with the two of them. But definitely there was just a sense of, I don't know, yeah, there was definitely a bit of a sense of boredom. Like, the routine got to me. The weather got to me massively. And, you know, my primary role over there was just as a mum. And yeah, I was bored, Tina. I get bored. I have a very active mind, and if I'm not doing something, I kind of go a bit crazy.
Right.
So I was scratching around, but looking for something. But I still kept Irish Queenslander going as a website the whole time, so that it would be there as a resource for the Irish community, in Queensland, and I kept in touch with the Irish community in Queensland, and anything I could help with, I helped with. So the connection was never broken.
Mm.
So you kind of have a foot in two countries, you know. It's hard enough to settle when you're like that, you know.
Yeah, indeed. And but it is good to have the connection, because, as you say, then you came back to Australia again in 2018. So it wasn't, was it sort of like a revisit, not necessarily starting fresh?
Yes. So, yeah, you kind of just fall back into it because you've already got the network built up. It's so much easier because, you know the lie of the land. Now you know how to get a house. You know how to deal with the system in Australia. It's much harder when you come here for the first time. And I think you're more settled in your mind as well. The first time I lived here, I was very, very homesick. I went back and gave myself a good old dose of reality. So when I've come back again, I'm way more settled. We're all much happier. The kids didn't enjoy school in Ireland. It's very hard to go from schools here, which are really green with lovely playgrounds and quite relaxed, into, you know, in Ireland, the playgrounds tend to be a big, huge slab of concrete.
And they're freezing.
Not a lot going on.
Yeah.
The school playgrounds, yeah. They really, especially my son, he never settled in any school in Ireland. And one of the choices to come back was that there's a lot of variety of types of schools here. And he's now in a flexible learning centre and he loves it. He wouldn't really have had those kind of options in Ireland.
And I suppose, you know, like people, many people do this, they decide to go back and try it out. And for some people, it works out really well, and others, it doesn't. But I think the thing as an immigrant is it's in the back of your mind all the time.
It is. It's very hard for people. I really feel sorry for people. But, you know, give it a go. If you're really that homesick, try going back. It's not the end of the world if it doesn't work out. You can come out here again, you know.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the Anglo and Celtic, your latest venture.
So when I came back, lots of people in Queensland were saying to me, are you going to start up Irish Queenslander again as a print magazine? And I put a lot of thought into, right, that magazine was too much and burnt me out at the time. What can I do? If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it differently. And when I had Irish Queenslander, I had the Scottish community sending stuff into me. I had the English community here asking me, would I set up British Queenslander? And I thought, right, there's very few publications now in Australia for you know, we lost the Echo, of course. And the British community had one called, I think it was BBA or something, British Balls Australia it was called. That was their magazine, and that closed. And I thought, right, if I'm going to do it, look, I'll do it nationwide, because, you know, Irish Queenslander ended up going down into New South Wales, and then I'm going, oh, God, I gave it the wrong name. you know, Irish New South Welshman doesn't really have a ring, you know. So I said, look, if I'll do it again, I'm just going to do it online. I'm going to make it all online so that when people contact me, they do it online. So I can't take over my life. And I want it to be national, and I want it to cover everyone from across the British Isles. Like, I've lived in London on and off for years, and I've lived in Scotland, and I've met so many good people over there. And, you know, they're over here, they're in the same boat as us. They're very tight communities, the same as we have in Ireland. Mm-hmm. They find themselves a bit lost and at sea as well. And so I wanted everyone included. I didn't want it to be just one community when I could very easily include the others, you know.
So, do people subscribe to it, or do you have a mailing list, or how does that work?
Yeah, so if people subscribe on the website, they'll get like an email every time we put an update, every time a story goes up, they'll get an email, and then I publish on that website once a month. The first day of the month, I do a free magazine, and you can download it for free or just read it for free.
Mm-hmm.
And we do gig guides as well. So it's an entertainment magazine. It's very light, it's very fun. Nothing, it's not serious news. Like, it's, I really think the world needs an injection of fun.
Yes.
And that's what this magazine is. We also have a mailing list, and we have our social media, you know, so you'll get the heads up, and I publish it out across the social media channels as well.
So any of our listeners now that want to, they just can just get to your, going via your website and have a look at the magazine.
I think the easiest thing to do is just hop into the website and you can subscribe. There's like a subscribe button, or there's a pop-up comes up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Nag you into subscribing. But and once every month. And of course, all the back issues are there. I've been doing it for a year now, so there's 12 months worth of back issues that you can look at as well on the website. The site is angloandceltic.com.
Angloandceltic.com. It's a great idea, and look, I admire your energy enormously, jumping from one side of the world to the other side of the world with children in tow, and still managing to keep this. But I guess when you have something that you can do, and I think, as you said to me, you do this in your own time, at your own pace, to fit in with the rest of your life.
Impeding too much on family life,
which is so important.
Yeah, the kids come first, absolutely. And then I do, I volunteer for Queensland Irish Association as well. That's the old Irish club that's up here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they needed a lot of help to rejuvenate and keep going after we lost our clubhouse in the city. That was a very sad time back in 2013, 2014, I think it was. They needed a lot of help, and I've helped them out a lot since I've come back. But they're a wonderful group, and they put on some lovely social events up here.
There's a real change happening, isn't it? Like, where a lot of the older established organisations that were sort of formed in like the 70s and 80s, and people get burned out or they retire. The world is changing. Social media is taking over. We've, like in Sydney, we have a number of people doing things all through Instagram. So there's, you know, people organising events, people organising health and well-being, yoga things, swims, all sorts of stuff, but all via social media. And that's how the people who are coming now are finding out their information, which I think is interesting, because the Ireland Fund had a do a couple of weeks ago for these younger people, basically for recent arrivals. And what a lot of them said was they didn't know that there was an established community as such. I guess because the older established community maybe aren't on Instagram.
I'm not a fan of Instagram. I'm not even a fan of Facebook, but it's a necessary evil, you know.
Yeah,
It's possible to get the word out without engaging with that stuff. But that stuff sucks up your life. It takes so much time.
It does, yeah.
Constantly putting updates on it. I mean, you guys in the radio station would know. It's like an extra part-time job, just keeping on top of that.
Well, we've actually got someone helping us out with all our social media now, because we literally couldn't keep up, you know, up, and can't get your head around the technicalities of it. But where, for people who it's just normal way of communicating, then it's really quick for them.
I mean, it is great, but it's not the same. There was a big lunch there now during the week for the Irish community up here, like a Christmas in July lunch, and there was nearly 100 people at it. You're not going to get that sense of connection and community and belonging looking at social media.
Well, I think you can have, a balance of both even, you know. So we were speaking to Maria from Melbourne earlier on today, and she set up this Manala Kaila, and that's about bringing people together at events and having conversations and people exchanging their details face to face. Helen has a question.
I'm a Queenslander. Where, that beautiful Irish club in Elizabeth Street, where have they gone to?
You know, we don't, as such, have a clubhouse at the moment. We've bought a premises in Fortitude Valley, but it had been bought with some intentions of maybe it being a clubhouse, but the members didn't think it was suitable. So we are on the hunt for somewhere. We're always on the hunt for somewhere. A lot of money was lost. That's why we lost the clubhouse. A lot of money was lost in that transaction. So we don't have the means that we would have had before to have something like that. But we are always looking for a new premises. And we organise functions now all over Brisbane. So we have a lot of stuff in West's Rugby Club in Toowong. And then we host functions and pubs and stuff around the city. And we always we advertise them online through Facebook and our website and social media. And we have like an active newsletter that keeps people informed about what's coming up. So yeah, we're kind of, we move around a lot, and we try to move around the city so that we're, you know, close to different groups of members, you know, so they don't have to all...
So that you're really centralised, you know, by being in the city. But I was in the Irish Club back in the 60s, and it was a magnificent building.
It is. It's a beautiful building. It's a cinema now.
Oh, is it on? Well, all things change. And the other thing that I was interested in, when you took your children back to Ireland, I would have thought that Irish is now part of the learning in Ireland. That would have been hard for your children whilst they're at school to have to learn, you know, Gaelic.
It was, or Irish. But, you know, my son was having none of it. He's hilarious. Like, they had an Australia week at school, and he said, I'm not coming in next week because I already know all that. But the Irish, but my daughter got an award for her Irish 3 months after coming back home. She came home from school with an award for her Irish. Kids' brains are quite malleable, and my kids were quite young at the time. So they did get back into it. And, you know, one thing that I really loved about having spent that time at home was that it did infuse them with their Irishness and their identity. I mean, we're all proud Aussies, of course. We love this country. It's done so much for us. But I love that they understand their home country. They speak a bit of the language. They have a bit of the accent. I definitely felt a sense of, when they were younger, I felt a sense of sadness about them not being Irish as such when they were little and they were just speaking in their Aussie accents. And I definitely felt a bit of, just a little bit of heartbreak that my kids weren't Irish.
Yeah. It's funny, Mary, it's Mary here. I'm quite similar to you over the years, and I've gone over and back, and I just think we're so blessed that we have that opportunity, that we are able to make those decisions about going over and back to Ireland. Because I know for me it's still home, and I certainly feel that, although Australia is also home. I have one son, and much the same as you, he has spent a lot of his life travelling on planes over and back to Ireland since he was 3 months old, and I actually put him into school there for a year when we were doing some work for my mum and dad as well when they got older. And it's funny the difference. He actually loved the schooling in Ireland. He absolutely adored it. He loved getting home at 2 o'clock every day and only having a half an hour's homework and then going out to play because the kids would come and knock on the door and they'd be gone until 6 o'clock in the evening, you know. But again, I agree with you. What it has done for him, he's 24 now, what it has done for him, it's certainly given him a very good understanding of his Irish background. His dad is Scotland and he's very close to Scotland as well, but it's certainly given him that. And I think, what age are your children?
So Isla is now 16.
Yeah.
Sorry, 17. She'll kill me.
Yeah.
She's 17 and older than 16.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when Ewan came back here, when he was in that age group, he was quite Australian, even though he loved Ireland. But then as he got to about 18 or 19 and he travelled back over himself and came back and he's going again, he went last year again, he lived over there for a year and a half and he's going again in July, he has certainly embraced his Irish culture very much and really loves it. So I just think it's great that they have the opportunity to do both.
Yeah.
Well, my children, Mary, are born of an Irish father and an Australian mother, and they have also, as adults, lived in Ireland, one for 4 years. Yes, and one travelled in Gale Force Dance for 6 years.
That's right, yeah.
So the Irish fingers go very, very far and wide, and it's a culture that's easy to embrace and easy to love.
We're lucky because the generation before us, my dad's generation, his whole family moved to London. There were 16 kids in my dad's family, and all except my dad moved to London, and one went to Jamaica. And a lot of them never again got to set foot in Ireland because they just couldn't afford it. The airfares were so expensive, they just couldn't afford it. So lucky now that this generation, we can fly home, it's affordable, we can do it.
We certainly can.
It's something that we take for granted, you know, but we really shouldn't because we're so lucky.
Well, unfortunately, Mary, we have to go to the news. I know there's so much we can cover here, but we'd love to chat to you again. Thanks so much for taking time out to chat to us this morning.
It's lovely talking to you all.
Plenty of other things to discuss, and we'd love to have you on again. So thank you very much, Mary.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.